very good Friday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In today's show, Taylor Charleston will have a report on how fumigants interact with both beneficial and harmful soil microbes and considerations to have when applying one. And he'll have a final speaker preview for the Crop Consultant Conference next week in Visalia. I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news beginning with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
As the nation marks National Farm Safety and Health Week now through September 23rd, the U.S. Department of Labor is urging agricultural industry employers and workers to act immediately to reverse an alarming increase in needless deaths and injuries in transportation-related incidents. In California, Oregon, and Washington, six recent transportation incidents led to eight agricultural worker fatalities and more than 30 injuries. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that of the 589 agricultural workers fatally injured on a job in 2020, 271 died in transportation-related incidents. From 2017 to 2021, the department's wage and hour division conducted more than 3,700 agricultural investigations. Many of the violations cited safety issues related to the transportation of workers to and from their work sites. In total, these investigations assessed employers more than $30 million in civil money penalties. Federal laws require farm labor contractors to register with the department and obtain authorization for housing and transporting or driving workers. Investigators typically identified the following types of related violations: failing to provide safe vehicles, transporting workers without authorization, using unregistered farm labor contractors to provide services, not obtaining required insurance coverage, and failing to ensure drivers have a valid license. To help employers and workers understand the critical need to ensure safety in the transportation of agricultural workers, the division offers information on transportation safety for agricultural workers and an agriculture compliance assistance toolkit on worker protections and employer obligations. You can learn more by calling 1-866-487-9243. When Robert Verloop took his job as Chief Executive Officer of the California Walnut Commission and Executive Director of the California Walnut Board, people told him they are sorry to see him leave the produce industry. Verloop has had an impressive background in the produce world, having held leadership positions at companies such as the California Avocado Commission, Sunkist Growers Incorporated, NutriRipe Farms, Coastline Family Farms, and Pandal Brothers Incorporated. But he insists he did not leave the produce industry because, as the back of his business card says, hashtag walnuts are produce too. It became self-evident when they had an opportunity to clarify that walnuts are a produce item, according to Verloop. The walnut industry has been on a phenomenal growth curve, he says, but it's starting to mature, forcing it to look at other points of distribution. They had to make a shift from a distributor model where they could sell everything they have to a mature market. One current goal is to expand the promotional activities with the produce department, according to Verloop. According to a recent survey, 76% of consumers are more likely to buy walnuts when they are displayed with fresh fruits and vegetables. And there's a lot of walnuts to market. Current forecasts for this year's crop are around 720,000 tons. Last year's crop came in well excess of the forecast, 670,000 tons, he says, and points out that in the end, it amounted to 725,000 to 730,000 tons, but that was an anomaly. Normally, it's much closer. This year's crop will probably come in closer to the forecast as a result of heavy heat stress this summer. Nevertheless, he notes that walnuts are pretty resilient because of the husk over the shell. The husk absorbs a lot of the light and sunburning. Only when the husk opens opens up, does the heat affect the shell? The walnut industry currently faces a number of challenges. They're in a very difficult situation, he says, with oversupply, supply chain issues, and retaliatory tariffs. Walnuts have been in the commercial news in recent months because of difficulties in shipping the crop out of the port of Oakland. At this point, the walnut industry, working with other agricultural interests, is setting up an alternative, loading rail cars directly to go to the port of Los Angeles. Nevertheless, he says there is reason in the long term to continue to be optimistic. Walnuts have become a popular planting choice in recent years because of the durability of the crop and the sustainability of the orchards. As Verloop points out, the trees are large with beautiful canopies that absorb sunlight instead of reflecting it back. This quality gives growers the opportunity for carbon sequestration credits. In addition to raising Nenetza's profile in the produce sector, Verloop points out the developments of new products, many of which are in their infancy. These include both sweet and savory snacks, as well as walnut-based meats. Verloop notes that plant-based meats are starting to wane a little bit. Consumers want a pure, clean label. He sees walnut products not as a replacement for meat, but bringing their own great taste to the table. And next on the horizon is walnut milk. California peaches continue to see steady supplies that should continue until mid-October. Other stone fruit commodities for Prima Wawona have finished up about 10 days ahead of last year, creating lighter inventories for this time of the year. The season also started 10 days earlier than average on most varieties. There were different weather patterns and chill hours impacting timing, with no clear answer on why. It has been an unusual year, according to Marcelo Jimenez Castro, director of sales for Prima. More recently in weather, Jimenez Castro says that light showers in the valley have brought some concerns. However, impacts have been minimal, and their agriculture and packing operations have taken all the necessary precautions to maintain the level of quality that they are known for. And demand is strong on yellow peaches. The nice eating quality of the fruit keeps consumption engaged. They expect customers to continue to be engaged with the late peach program and take advantage of this opportunity to finish strong. And demand is strong on yellow peaches. The nice eating quality of their fruit keeps consumption engaged, and they expect their customers to continue to be engaged with the late peach program and take advantage of this opportunity to finish strong. Prices are staying stronger than last year at this time. They are on the rise as availability gets tighter, according to Jimenez Castro. There are only a few growers participating in the late peach programs, creating an opportunity for higher prices. The major California ports in Los Angeles and Long Beach saw a slowdown in their container volumes this August. Port of Los Angeles reported a 15% decrease in its August box volumes compared to the same month last year, with 806,000 TEUs. The Port of Long Beach handled 806,940 TEUs, down just 764 TEUs from August of 2021. Port of Long Beach noted that falling gas prices alleviated worries about inflation, but consumer spending remained flat in August. POLA Executive Director Gene Soroka expressed another opinion about the volume decrease. He says some goods that usually arrive in August for the fall and winter season shipped earlier to make sure they reach their destination in time. He also said that inflationary concerns and elevated inventory levels have made some retailers and e-commerce sellers more cautious. They've been able to nearly eliminate the backlog of ships waiting to enter the port by 90% compared to earlier this year. He says they have got capacity on the terminals and the ability to handle cargo coming in more efficiently than the last holiday season.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Learn more now about how fumigants interact with both beneficial and harmful soil microbes and what considerations there should be when applying one. A report now with Taylor Chalstrom.
Fumigation, whether it's directed towards something like nematodes, harmful bacteria, or other microorganisms, isn't necessarily a targeted approach in all cases. The beneficial microbes present in soils with adequate amounts of organic matter can be affected by fumigants too. Fumigants can affect the whole soil health web, in fact, and that's important to consider when applying them.
If you're using a fumigant with a broad biocidal activity, this can affect both your target and non-target microorganisms, meaning the fumigants can affect those beneficial soil microbes as well as your pathogenic microbes. And we know those beneficial microbes play a role in things such as nutrient cycling and plant nutrient uptake. So if we are targeting those non-target organisms, this can negatively impact your soil health. And really the ability for these non-target organisms to recover after the fumigation, this is really critical, as we know that we need these to help promote soil health. So studies have been done to look at how these microbial communities are affected after fumigation. And what studies are showing is that these microbial communities can shift due to fumigation, meaning we see changes in the functional diversity of these communities. So fumigation treatments that cause these community shifts can also contribute to physical, chemical, biological changes in the soil. And we know that all of those together is what builds your soil health and quality. So ultimately, the fumigation can impact your soil health. So studies have also looked at, after fumigation, how non-target organisms, such as your arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, or AMF, those gram-negative and positive bacteria, the actinomycetes, and fungi biomass is declined compared to a non-fumigated field. So we know that these plant beneficial bacteria and fungi are also negatively impacted after fumigation. However, the impact of those microbial communities in recovery is also dependent on the type of fumigation you're using. So studies looked at how impactful these different fumigations are. So they did everything from methyl bromide, which is being phased out and not being used anymore. And what they found is that methyl bromide had the most detrimental effects on the microbial communities and also that recovery, whereas 1,3-D had the least impact. So we know that there are detrimental effects occurring, but really it's that recovery that's really important.
That was Cassidy Milliam with Helier Ag. Since microbes being harmed by fumigation applications is pretty much inevitable, the recovery period of these microbes is what's going to be key moving forward, making sure they go back to doing what they were originally doing for the soil. There's a few ways to do this.
And understanding how to build them back up and how long are they affected is kind of confusing because there's a lot of contradictory studies out there looking at how quickly do those microbial communities recover after fumigation. So some studies show it can happen within hours. Some show up to 90 days, up to months, to years before you see that recovery happening. And I think a lot of that plays into how often you're fumigating, how long you've been using those practices, and also your other management practices you're doing to help build back those communities. So we looked at studies where we looked at long-term fumigation effects. And what we saw is that we are reducing those AMFs, so those beneficial fungi that play a role in plant nutrient uptake and soil fertility. And we're also seeing that we affect the abundance and diversity of those within those fields. We also know that we can see that there is in non-fumigated fields, we have a higher total microbial biomass and total carbon. So that plays a role in that soil quality and soil structure and fertility and water infiltration. So over time, we know that fumigation also has detrimental effects. So how do we really build back these microbial populations? And again, it's utilizing amendments and practices. That's really the biggest thing we can do for fumigating. So adding those biologicals back into the soil, so those plant beneficial bacteria and fungi, this can be beneficial, as well as we really need to be careful on which products we're choosing to add back in based on viability. These are living organisms, so making sure you're getting a viable option to get those back into the field. And then in general, implementing soil health practices. So that manure and compost back in, also making sure you're providing proper nutrient applications. So doing a soil test, seeing where your nutrient levels are after fumigation, as well as your pH levels, and making sure you're doing proper amendments to get that back into a maintenance stage. And then another thing is you need to jumpstart the microbes you have present. Those are all coming back in. They need to fill that void of where you're killing off those pathogenic microbes. So giving them a food source or a liable carbon source. So you can use things such as microalgae or molasses to add those back in to get those populations jumpstarted. Another good option as well is cover crops. Incorporating cover crops back into your rotation to help build up that organic matter and recycle some more nutrients.
Since there are often instances where fumigation is simply necessary for a field, there are agricultural measures that can be taken to reduce the fumigant's effect on microbial populations.
Incorporating cover crops into your rotation will help you improve your soil quality and build up that organic matter. So getting that into your rotation, as well as making sure you have a really good crop rotation. So putting in a crop, if you have a high level of a pathogenic disease, putting in a resistant crop to help break down that disease pressure, as well as doing other practices such as reduced tillage, so you're not breaking up that soil structure, improving that soil quality, which helps those microbes thrive. And again, incorporating some compost to build soil health and also aid in that microbial population increase in fertility. And so those types of practices will add more carbon and organic matter back into the soil and really focus on the soil health piece of that. But when we're looking at alternatives to fumigation, there are some biological alternatives and biofumigants out there that are an option. Again, you need to look at what diseases you're trying to control and making sure you're choosing the right one to control those diseases. But there's additional practices that are not actually chemicals. So looking at things such as biosolarization. So that is a practice of adding in an organic amendment, and then you cover it with a tarp and using the heat from the solar, the sun, to heat up that ground to help kill off those pathogenic diseases, as well as there's anaerobic soil disinfestation, where you can incorporate, again, a carbon source. So a grass hay or molasses, you incorporate that into your topsoil. You then saturate that soil with water, cover it in plastic. So you're creating an anaerobic condition, or you're removing the oxygen out. And this helps suppress pathogenic microbes as well. So there are some practices that you can incorporate that are not for fumigation, but really integrating a overall pest management strategy. So multiple strategies will really help you lower your disease pressure throughout the entire season. So you can do things like making sure you're selecting the right resistant cultivar, rotating a crop that is resistant or tolerant to the disease that you have issues with, as well as doing management practices throughout the season to make sure you're controlling diseases. So in addition to these different things, you can also make sure that you're doing soil health management practices, because if you have a healthier soil, you're going to have a healthier plant, which means disease overall is less likely.
More about practices that can mitigate the effects of fumigation on microbial populations, or alternatives to fumigation in general, like biosolarization for some instances, can be found in articles in West Coast Nut at WCNGG.com. You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says tropical activity in the Pacific is resulting in a longer than normal monsoon season in a desert southwest.
We are watching the eastern Pacific tropical basin. There is a relatively innocuous looking tropical storm named Madeline that is just south of Baja California, but there's a large envelope of moisture surrounding that system. And because there's a weak storm system off the California coast, some of that tropical moisture is being drawn northward. And so we're seeing a late season resurgence of the North American monsoon, obviously infused with that tropical moisture. And so typically we see the monsoon withdrawing from the southwestern United States around mid-September. So we're getting to the point where we're about a week late on the withdrawal of the monsoon. But thanks to Tropical Storm Madeline and the northward draw from the system off the California coast, we do have the potential for some flash flooding and some debris flows once again into the southwestern United States over the next couple of days.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. A bill has been introduced by Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa called the Biochar Research Network Act. The Republicans' legislation seeks to study the effectiveness of biochar, which is a carbon-rich material produced from biomass. Specifically, the bill would establish a national biochar research network to test the impact of biochar across various types of soil, application methods, and climates to learn more about its capacity to benefit farmers and the environment. Grassley says a lot of work remains to fully understand the benefits biochar could provide, and that's why he is honored to lead the introduction of the Biochar Research Network Act. The proposed research network would work to understand productive uses for biochar to help with crop production and climate mitigation. The network would also assess biochar's potential for soil carbon sequestration and deliver cost-effective and practical information to farmers on sustainable biochar production and application. A companion bill was recently introduced into the U.S. House of Representatives. A new study shows increasing dependence on off-farm employment and income reveals a growing economic interconnection of rural communities and surrounding cities. According to a study by researchers at the University of Missouri, 82% of U.S. farm household income now comes from off-farm sources. The study was commissioned by CoBank and completed in partnership with CoBank's Knowledge Exchange. Most farmers cited reliable income as the top reason for off-farm employment, as one half of farm households have negative farm income in a typical year. Health and retirement benefits were also cited as key reasons for off-farm jobs within farm households. Among the study's key findings is that rural communities have increasingly diverse economies, and success within a rural community's agricultural sector is largely dependent on other sectors of the regional economy at large. Today, only 6.5% of workers in rural counties are employed in agriculture, compared to 15.4% in 1970. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers recently unveiled its Equipment Industry Sustainability Toolkit. The toolkit provides assessments and resources to help manufacturers and their supply chains minimize operational impact on the environment. The toolkit aims to advance the equipment manufacturing industry's efforts to align with evolving regulation and support a more sustainable world. AEM President Megan Tennell says a toolkit is a resource to help their member companies take action to deliver lasting change to protect the environment. AEM Sustainability Council Chair Karen Cecil adds the assessments in the toolkit provide actionable best practices for improving sustainability opportunities and efficiency, plus minimizing risks. The toolkit offers action plans, tools, and best practices to implement under four phases of the sustainability maturity model. The toolkit also features several assessments designed to help company leaders navigate the evolving sustainability landscape and identify areas for improvement. An active summer wildfire season in the West is starting to slow down, although at a slight pace. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Dozens of active wildfires continue to burn in the West Coast and Northern Rockies.
The greatest concentration of fires is in the Northern Rockies, where we continue to see quite a bit of smoke and some air quality degradations.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, however, says the wildfire situation has slightly improved from the previous week.
We are still looking at a number of 100,000 plus acre fires in various stages of containment. We have one that's been burning for a couple of months now. We've got two fires in Oregon that have each burned more than 100,000 acres, one in northeastern Oregon, one in west central Oregon. And then in California, the Mosquito Fire has recently become the state's largest of the year to date. It has charred more than 75,000 acres of vegetation.
Cooler, more humid, and showery conditions are aiding in wildfire containment efforts. To date, almost 7 million acres have burned in the U.S. this year. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Taylor Charleston is in next with a final speaker preview for the Crop Consultant Conference next week in Visalia.
Our final speaker preview for the 2022 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California next week on the 28th and 29th features Luca Brillante of Fresno State University. He'll be covering how heat stress affects grapevines and yield.
We'll be talking about methods to deal with heat stress and especially how to keep grape quality and yield consistent during a very strong heat event. Right now, we are in a very long heat wave, so everybody can relate to that. And we, all the wine grape industry is struggling to understand what we can do for that. So we have been tested a few solutions in the past, and we're currently doing some research trials at Fresno State, and I will talk about a couple of them. We're testing some canopy management techniques late in the season, some particular practices that try to reduce the canopy size so that transpiration is reduced and the plants has less water stress without additional water applications. And we also have some products that we have been testing, which are antitranspirants or reflectant particle film technology products that they may help or not, depending on the conditions you grow grapes in and how hot it is and how much sun you get. And so we will be talking about a comparison of these strategies, something that you can spray and something that you can actually mechanically apply as a canopy management techniques. And we'll see the results on grapes, and we'll see the results on wines, and we'll try to see if we can do something about these climate change and heat events.
Brillante said he's definitely seen heat stress affecting some orchards this year.
From the vineyards that I've been working on, I see that there is a general decrease into yields. We are in a second year of drought, and then in the August and early September so far has been very hot. We have been in a very long heat wave, so which is a little bit unusual to be that long at this time of the year, and is affecting grape yield because of dehydration and grape quality because of degradation of good compounds that we want in our wines. A little bit across the borders in all areas, and mostly working to the Central Valley and the Central Coast.
Brillante believes this information will be important to consultants in attendance at the conference this year as temperatures continue to rise on a year-by-year basis.
We are comparing products that are available in organic that can deal with some resilience to heat stress and reduce transpiration. So for sure, it's something that needs to be recommended from consultants. And so there is not a lot of research or a lot of data available on these products at this point in California. And so, again, those are very specific to the conditions you apply them in, because it depends on how much sun and how much light, how high the temperature is and how much radiation you get. And so their efficiency can change across growing conditions. If you want to know more about how they will perform into California, then for sure we'll get data that you haven't seen yet.
Time to register for the conference is running out. Register today at progressivecrop.com. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.